Do we get to hug?
We're going to call to order the meeting of the Senate Committee on Education. Today's May 5th, Cinco de Mayo, 2015. And for those who weren't here earlier, it's also the Revenge of the 5th after yesterday's May the 4th be with you. So, given all of those wonderful things about this fine day, I thought we would go out of order. I mean, there's no reason to follow the order if we can help it. And since I have two illustrious representatives, we will take their bill first. So we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2655, and we'll have our two representatives come on up and a short explanation by our administrator.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, House Bill 2655A directs the State Board of Education to adopt specified standards related to student education records. This bill was voted out of the House Committee on Education 7-2. The bill has no subsequent referral, no amendments at this time, a minimal fiscal impact, and no revenue impact.
And with that, we welcome both of you. Whoever wants to go first.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Chris Gorsuch, State Representative from District 49 in East Multnomah County. Chair Roblin and members of the committee, thank you for hearing this bill today. House Bill 2655 makes some clear fixes to our state's assessment system based on a few principles that I think we all share. Parents know their children best, and parents should have the freedom to make the decisions based on what they believe is right and wrong for their child. They should be able to do it without having to lie or provide an in-depth defense of their deeply held beliefs. Today, you're discussing another bill, House Bill 2680, which is a bill that creates a work group for educational professionals to produce an improved design for assessments. This legislation is the next step. Right now, there's a patchwork of requirements for parents to opt out for religious reasons, which vary by district. This bill creates one clear, consistent statewide standard, which is why the Oregon Department of Education helped to develop it. Currently, summative assessment information is available inequitably. More affluent areas with engaged PTAs provide information about opting out, while areas without engaged parent groups do not. As a result of the misinformation, parents are told their children won't be eligible for advanced classes or their school funding will be adversely affected if their child does opt out. This bill fixes that, creating clear and uniform information available to all parents in all schools and districts. It simply says students are entitled to information about what tests they will take and how their data will be used. It states we should have clear uniform standards and information statewide, and that parents should not have to lie if they think opting out is the best thing for their child. As you will see, HB 2655A has been amended to include a six-year sunset. This was done to address concerns by some that we wouldn't truly know the impacts of this action and that they would feel more comfortable if we built in a review of the bill in the near future. I happen to believe that this opt-out right should exist without the sunset. However, the sunset will work just fine, I believe, and passing this bill will then allow us, with the six-year sunset, to go back and review our work in the 2021 session. 6 years is an appropriate compromise. It will offer the comfort of an opportunity to review this policy while ensuring adequate time for policy changes at the federal level and here in Oregon. I want to be clear about this bill. It is a remedy for a number of problems faced by the Oregon Department of Education. It will not affect federal funding for schools, and it does provide the ODE with clear guidelines that they have been active in shaping and approve of. Many parents deserve this opt-out right for their children, and I hope that we will provide it for them. And I'm here to answer any questions you may have. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We'll go to our next guest, and then we'll have a
question. Thank you, Chair Roland, and members of the committee. I'm Representative Lou Frederick, House District 43 from North and Northeast Portland. I submitted a number of things you should have in OLIS there as well, so if you might want to look at those on the record. House Bill 2655 touches two issues that I believe should be legislative priorities for public schools. One is the security of public records, of student records. And the other is the rights of students and families when it comes to statewide summative assessments. I'm going to talk primarily about the statewide summative assessment part, in which families are afforded the right to excuse students from this particular assessment regimen for the time being. We currently allow families to excuse students for religious reasons, but not for ethical reasons or reasons of conscience. You will hear that some districts interpret religious broadly, but the operative word there is some, and that is a big part of the problem. Families are given different information and different options around the state for a process that's supposed to be statewide. I understand that those of us who question these tests come from a variety of positions. Our reasons are not necessarily the same, but the conclusions that there are far too many unanswered questions, too much professional dissent, and too much dissent from parents and students who are experiencing this directly to make it universally mandatory is something I hope we can agree on. The objections that families raise are not simply alarmist. They are coming from parents who have read everything they can find about the tests themselves, their creation, and how they will be scored and interpreted. They have looked at the practice questions that are available. Objections are also coming from professionals at all levels, including people who have dedicated their professional lives to the field. And when I say the field, I don't just mean education generally, but also to the specific discipline of testing and evaluation. And they boil down to this. What this test can actually measure doesn't match the height. The quality of the test questions themselves and of the scoring procedures are, well, questionable. The scoring procedures and the determination of cut scores has been called into serious question. Scorers are recruited via Craigslist and are minimally trained, and the scoring procedures are not supported by professional standards. I hope you all get a chance to view last week tonight with John Oliver, in which he reported humorously, but still reported on the subject of high-stakes standardized tests. There's evidence of potential harm to individual students from these tests. While theoretical benefits are to educational programs generally, to future researchers, to evaluation plans that have themselves not been validated. There is no settled science supporting these tests. They are experimental at best. A failed experiment is one that produces unreliable or invalid data, and that is where we are headed. As one parent put it, nobody has expressed a coherent reason why my kids should take these tests. They just say keywords intermittently in fast conversation like rigor, accountability, civil rights, without connecting the meaning of those words to what the tests actually do. Reports of social media surveillance of children following the tests is truly disturbing. If test security requires this much invasion, we've got a problem. Also disturbing is the extent of information to be transmitted into nationwide databases, especially combined with reports of data breaches. In a related issue, we're hearing that minor children are being held to some kind of contract not to disclose test contents. It's not clear what happens if they refuse to agree to the terms demanded by the test vendor. I'm guessing that Kafka is not one of the authors excerpted in the English language arts test. The students might recognize their situation if it was. Finally, parents note that their students are being treated as research subjects without the protections usually afforded research subjects. House Bill 2655 also repeals significant parts of itself in 6 years. By 2021, we should know a lot more. The landscape may have changed, and sometime in the next 6 years, we should be in a better position to decide whether this should be a universal mandate, a continuing option, or something else. The federal mandate is being reconsidered as we speak, and right now we don't have much more to justify this test being mandatory than that, well, it's mandatory. That's not even circular reasoning. I have to say one more thing. I am tired of poor children and children of color being used as props. We've all heard the argument that if these well-informed parents get their children excused, then poor children and children of color will be left behind. The data will be skewed because of that, and therefore we shouldn't let anyone opt out. Setting aside the premises, if there's logic there, I'm just not getting it. Senators, the data is already skewed by the increasingly famous shoddiness of the tests. We keep hearing that these tests will somehow help us close the achievement gap, but nobody has credibly explained how. We should not simply believe. I'm going to repeat something I said before. Those of us who question these tests are coming from a variety of starting points, assumptions, and even ideologies. Our reasons may not be the same, but many of us have arrived at similar conclusions. There are far too many unanswered questions, too much professional dissent, and too much dissent from parents and students who are experiencing this directly to make it universally mandatory. I realize that not all issues can be settled and decisions must be made, but a universal mandate ought to have a greater degree of confidence and certainly a greater degree of professional consensus behind it. The smarter balanced assessment, in my view, is not ready for a universal mandate. 6 years gives us time for the due diligence that has not happened yet. I urge you to pass this to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Knope, did you want to say a few words as one of the sponsors?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, thank you, gentlemen, for sponsoring this bill. I had a bill, Senate Bill 418, on the Senate side that was very similar. And I think it is important, as you stated, that we secure kids' records, their tests, scores, and all those, because I think in today's technology, any database is hackable, and I think that's been proved. And I think it's important that we as a state make sure that those protections are there. And I think the fundamental issue in this bill is parental rights and the rights of a parent to be able to determine what's best for their child. And although I think all of us agree with accountability and making sure that we know where kids are at, I think most people are aware that I homeschool my kids and have since they were, 3 or 4 years old. So our oldest is now at community college, works in the building a little bit. And we test them once a year for about 3 hours, and that's what they do. And that information comes to us as parents. We look at that, and it helps us gauge where they're at and where they need to improve. And if you spent time in schools with kids and with teachers, what they'll tell you is that they spend an inordinate amount of time in testing. And I think we have to decide what's that really accomplishing. And would it be more important to have that be instruction time versus testing time? And there was one gentleman from a high school who thought that he took about 18 days of instruction time for this particular test, for the Smarter Balance test, to make sure that the kids were ready. And if that's the case, I think that we need to rethink things a bit. And so I think the bills that, the bill that is up for work session, and I think this bill in tandem together, I think work to help remedy some of those situations. And so I'm glad you've brought it forward, and I think I've jumped on to your bill as mine was used for other purposes. I don't know how that happened. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any questions for this panel? We'll start down at the far end then. Let's go with Senator Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciated what you said about the uniformity across the state. My daughter is a junior, and Smarter Balance was given at her school last week, and over the weekend she said, "Wow, I can't believe how many kids it's against their religion to take the Smarter Balance." And then she wanted to know what our church, the Lutheran Church, has to say about the Smarter Balance. So I do think that it makes more sense to have an honest conversation about why. Why we're not doing that? Why we're not doing that testing? And to provide some flexibility to families and parents to make choices about what's best for their kids. Some kids, they can go in, they can take that test, and it's not that big of a deal. But for a lot of our kids, they see this as a description of their worth and as their intelligence. And the pressure that comes with these tests is not commensurate with the value, and I see the test as having zero value for my kids. I understand the value for the system. We need to have a way to be able to look demographically at how we're doing among different cohort groups and how can we improve as a system. But the other bill that we're going to send out of the committee today, I hope, will protect schools and teachers from being evaluated on the basis of these scores. But we still leave behind the kids. We know that 70% of them likely are not going to hit the score that they need. Right. And those kids are going to see that score on the screen or someone's going to tell them. And I want to know, what are we doing to protect 70% of our kids so we're not sending them home feeling like they're failing and that they don't have worth as learners? To me, that is a travesty. And the damage that inflicts on the kids isn't worth the demographic data that we're going to get.
Senator.
Thank you for bringing this. I did see the John Oliver thing, and it was amazingly funny on one hand, but the other thing was it was amazingly tragic because it was totally accurate. And we have companies out there making a very good living off of tests that accomplish nothing, in my opinion. And they are creating monopolies out there. I just want to remind both of you, because you're both old enough to remember what assessment was like.
He's back. Not. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
Thanks,
well,
sir.
Yeah, he's probably in his 40s, so it's okay.
That was a wonderful assessment.
Back in the day when we were assessed in school, we had things called grades.
Exactly. Okay,
which allowed teachers to teach to the students, not to some arbitrary standard. Right. And I think, quite honestly, it's time to get back to what used to work. And I would suggest, Mr. Chair, that when the federal government got involved in education, number one, I think it's a constitutional violation, number one, but number two, the quality has continued to go downhill from that point. And it's time that we got local control back in schools and Oregon got control of our system again. So thank you for bringing this.
Yes,
comment. And Senator, I teach college, so it's a little bit different, but that's exactly what we do. We spend most of our time on content, and then we do one or two or maybe three exams over the course of the term, and then we produce a result. And I can look at, I run my scores. I can look through and see the weak tests, questions, and it's a question of did I not teach it well or did they, not get it for some other reason. But we, at one time, in the olden days, we were doing it that way, and we had one of the finest education systems in the world.
Yes.
And I think you're right. I think we've gone astray.
Senator Roebling, members of the committee, Senator Cruz, you had in February or early March, you had Young Zhao here.
Yes.
To speak about this very situation. I mean, this is what he was talking about. What's going to be best? What's going to be effective? And what are we going to follow what an experiment that's already been run in other countries, the Chinese experiment? And or are we going to actually decide we're going to work with kids individually and figure out what they need? And he was very clear on that. I would encourage you to go back and, if you can, either listen to his work or to read some of his presentation. These are concerns that I keep running into. I have parents who are now telling me that they're being told that if they have to show what religion they're about, and if they decide they don't want to have this particular test, then they must have a religion that's against all standardized tests, so they're not going to let their kids take the SATs. This is the kind of thing that we're having. That's not what we're talking about here, but that's how much of a patchwork we have across the state. The state Department of Education has said very clearly they would like to have something that's a standard, and this helps them have that standard.
Mr. Just one follow-up. The one thing during that presentation that stuck with me and always will was when he said our job should not be to prepare children for kindergarten. Our job should be to prepare kindergarten for children. and that is brilliant and absolutely on point.
Senator Hess, thank you. Do you think we should have standardized tests at all?
The answer for me is yes. Yes, I think we should have standardized tests. I think we need to figure out where they should be used and how they should be used. And we should make sure that they are actually tracking what we want people to learn. I mean, it's not a matter of standardized tests. It's a matter of what are we going to do with them, and how do they help us? And that's one of the concerns that I have. Senator.
Follow up. Yep. Well, okay, because that's a different argument than some of the arguments that have been put forth in something like this.
kids don't do well at tests. We shouldn't be doing this. If we're talking about, okay, we want to do standardized tests, but this one isn't put together right, even though it was developed by scientists and educators mm-hmm. and some of the top minds in this country, then it sounds like, okay, we'll try to find another one that's done better or differently, or what is it, if we're going to do standardized tests, what is it that's lacking in this one that would be replaced by something that's in a different variety of standardized tests?
Let me go out, because that's an absolutely on-target question. The standardized tests, this particular thing, first of all, was not put together with any teachers involved. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were involved. They handed them the test questions and said, these are the questions, what do you think of them? When they came back with answers, they decided to ignore pretty much all of those answers. So this was put together by a different group than folks who were actually working with kids in the classroom. That's one aspect. So that's an aspect that I think is important, because if we want to have standardized tests, let's make sure that they are, in fact, covering what we want to know. The standardized and any standardized test. I mean, I have objections, I have concerns about the SAT, because it's skewed towards. One of my colleagues told me it's basically skewed towards folks who have studied Latin. If you study Latin, you can do much better on the SAT than you can on otherwise, because it was created to actually talk about kids who were in prep schools in the Northeast, who were Latin was one of the key elements there, parts of the test. That's still the case, but let's look at what we really want to do with the standardized test. I think we need to understand if we're trying to use it in an attempt to say this is what we want each kid to learn, then I think we're making a mistake there, because kids learn at different levels and want to learn different things. I certainly did. I mean, I'm not a great linguist. I wish I could say that I my son is much better at that than I am, but I have a pretty good handle on math and science, and I have a pretty good handle on literature. We need to know how we're going to what we want to study, what we want kids to have as a base of knowledge. But that doesn't mean that we want them to be the same thing. And what we've seen a really poor process of getting kids of looking at what kids really need to do to launch themselves as adults. That's not the case with this. This particular standardized test fails in my view, and that's one of the biggest problems I have with it. And we have put so much pressure. It's not just the standardized test itself. These tests are now determining the value of the homes in the area of a school. I have a school in my district, Vernon Elementary School, because of the changes and people decided not to take some of the tests, it went from a 3 to a 1. And the realtors came to me and said, we've had to drop the home price.
Okay, but now you're not arguing why this standardized test is the wrong one. You're arguing that we shouldn't have something like this.
I'm saying
we need to have one, then let's have one. You're just saying this one isn't the right one.
I'm saying that this test, with all of the things that are officially associated with it, which shouldn't be, which include the whether it's supposed to be determining how well a school is doing, is the wrong direction we should be taking. That's what I'm saying.
earlier, I think Representative Gorsuch, you said this will not affect or jeopardize any federal funds. Do we know that for a fact? You know that for a fact?
That's what we've been told by Oregon Department of Education.
Okay, we're going to hear from them.
They are here, I see, so we can.
I also, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, Senator Haas, members of the committee, it's not a question of whether you assess schools. It's a question of how you do it. I'm not convinced that having teachers spend inordinate amounts of their time on any test taking away from classroom instruction. I think you don't do the instruction for the test. You do it the other way around. The test is for what they've been learning. And I don't think we have that here. The idea is, just as it was in our day, God, I sound like an old guy now. As it was in our day, we had a curriculum that was approved by the state. You go through that curriculum, testing students in normal settings along the way, and then you base your assessment on that. You don't need a fancy company to come in and tell you, no, this is actually how it should be done, unless there's something wrong with the curriculum. So I don't think that... It's not saying don't assess things. What we're saying is assess them properly. And this doesn't do that, in my opinion.
Paul? Well, Mr. Chair, I would just say, okay, then if the methodology is different, if we're going to say we want to do standardized mm-hmm. testing and let's do it appropriately, okay, fine. Then let's do it appropriately. Let's not quit. And but what I hear is an argument of standardized testing in general, testing and all of that that it brings with it, whether it's redlining in poor neighborhoods or whether it's stress on the children. Either we're going to do it or not. If we decide we're going to do it, then let's find a vehicle to do it and not make up these other arguments that are against the actual dynamic of having standardized testing.
I think you're, Mr. Chair, Senator Haas, members of the committee, I think you're absolutely right about that. And I think that sometimes you can go back to the older way of doing things and find that it works very well. I think that we could do a refinement, but you're still going to have something to assess, absolutely.
Senator Beyer.
Yeah, just jump into this conversation a little bit. It's not like... This is the first time we started doing standardized tests.
No.
I think most of us who grew up in that era did either the Iowa Basics or the California Achievement Test. We've been doing those schools forever, which is a standardized test. Why they fell out of favor, I don't know. I don't remember when I was going through school ever being prepared to take those. You just took them and took about a day once a year to do it. And they were standardized. And the other one is... Not all students, and maybe they should, but those who wanted to move on to college usually took either or both the SAT test or the ACT test.
That's right.
And I think those are valid assessment tools, too, although they have their problems. Every assessment tool you use has its problems. Right. And I think those of you who were teachers, you are those of us who were students at some time, all went through and you had the weekly quiz or the midterm and final. So testing isn't new. I think maybe we got off track with the smarter balance is this whole thing of building accountability for schools as if you can compare them that way, and I'm not sure you can. And when we started throwing in performances of the teaching faculty too, that I think we really screwed things up. Then we threw in this preparing to the test, and you may be able to use metrics, use it in other businesses, but it's become clear to me that really has become more of an obstacle than a help in improving education in the state. And the last point was this particular technology of doing this for what we've heard about, how much time it's taken away, both preparation, which you shouldn't be doing, and just taking the test is we can't afford that. So we need, I think Senator Haas is right, we probably do need to go back and have an assessment system. Mm-hmm. But one that doesn't demand as much time to get there and doesn't tie into teacher performance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, to Senator Beyer. Absolutely. I think that especially when we start to get into the assessment of the school, as Representative Frederick related, or assessment of teachers, the one thing that we miss is the fact that teaching is not in a vacuum. In other words, the community and the family and everything else is a factor in this. And unfortunately, I think so often we're assuming that it's only the teacher, but we know that poverty issues, crime issues, social disruptions in a neighborhood, those things all contribute too. That's why I think we have to be careful with how much we tag on to a particular school, because it's much more complex than that.
Senator Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to tag on to Senator Beyer and Senator Haas. I do think that standardized assessment is important, as I said before, for tracking how we're doing as a system. And it's not necessarily this test itself that I have issues with. I think anytime you have a transition to a new process, there's going to be glitches and there's problems. The issue that I have is the broader culture around testing and assessment, which is partly what you've talked about, tying it to performance of schools, the school report cards, tying it to teacher pay and teacher evaluation. That puts an inordinate amount of pressure on kids. And while we all took standardized assessments when we were in school, I don't remember thinking about it. I don't remember knowing the name of it. I don't remember knowing the schedule of when new ones were going to come out. I don't remember knowing how that information was going to be used. But I know my kids, and that it's not just my kids, because when I drive other kids around in the back seat, they've been talking about the upcoming Smarter Balance for years. They have trouble sleeping. They're really worried about how their scores will impact other people. And when you have that level of importance, how your school is funded, how your teacher is paid, that tells you that that is an incredibly important test. So I don't think it's the test or the idea of standardized assessment. It's the culture around that and the amount of pressure that we're putting on kids, because I don't know about you, but that did not exist for me when I was taking those assessments.
Senator Knopf.
Well, Mr. Chair, I feel the need to jump back in. Senator Cruz, I think, made a very valid point, and that was that since the federal government got involved in education, I don't think it's gotten better. And I don't see anywhere in the Constitution where it says that the federal government was in charge of education. I believe the Constitution says those things that are not enumerated are to be taken up by the states. And so I think, other than equal access, as it relates to the federal government and President John F. Kennedy making sure that that happened, I don't think the federal government has a role. And my problem with a lot of this stuff is that it's being mandated from top down federal bureaucracy. And I'd be just as happy for them to block grant the money that they want to spend on education to the states and allow them to distribute that to the local school districts, where I think we have very qualified administrators, principals, staff that can figure it out. And so I think that's part of the pushback that I'm attempting to do as it relates to some of these issues that, quite frankly, this legislature never voted on, but were mandated through acceptance of Race to the Top and No Child Left Behind and all that. And however well-intentioned those things are, I don't think that they've been very productive.
And I guess I just, to bring this back to the bill, a little bit.
I think I was impugned.
No, it wasn't yours. I'm talking about all, because I thought the bill said that we're going to make sure that we're careful about student information, mm-hmm. and that we're going to take care of that. And we're also going to say that parents have a right to do an opt-out for the next 6 years,
yes.
while either the test gets improved, other things happen, it becomes something that's a social norm that says this is good information for everybody to know about all of this, and people choose to get back in, or the test goes away, because we've had some experiences with tests going away over the last mm-hmm. few years. So is that kind of the essence of the bill from that's, your perspective?
Yeah, that's it exactly. I really want to know, we already know how some communities, how some kids are doing. It's not a mystery. About the impact of poverty and other things on how well on the academic level of a number of kids. We know what to do about it too. The question for me is, what are we going to really do about it? And I'm not convinced that these tests give us much information. What I want to see is starting to take action on this, and rather than spending an inordinate amount of time preparing kids for tests, making sure that they're not able to do some of the science that they'd like to do, some of the language, the literature that they'd like to learn, the art. We're putting them in front of computers so that they can take the test or get prepared for the test or pay for the preparation for the test preparation, which happens to come from the same company. I mean, these are the kinds of things that I'm concerned about. So let's actually get kids learning and really getting a chance to learn, rather than spending their time worried about what they're going to do on the test or how it's going to affect their teacher or their school.
And, Mr. Chair, the beauty of this is that it is only temporary. And we do, hopefully, we'll have the work group that comes together and tries to do better assessment, if you will, of the assessment process, so that this is just giving people a little breathing room, I think.
Yep.
Any further questions?
Thank you both for being
here. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your questions. Very enlivening debate.
We have two other representatives with respect to two other bills, so I'm going to open those so they can come up and have a conversation.
With your blessing, could you leave this one open?
For we will. A short window? Yeah. We will leave this one open and open a couple others. So with that, we will also open House Bill 2412A, and we'll call Representative Taylor up, and we will open House Bill 3069A and invite Representative Johnson up. Sorry about that. You can both come on up, and one can talk first and then the other. It's nice to be not lonely up there by yourselves. You know. So we can start with 2412A. Representative Taylor, you want to go first? That's you.
Sorry. Okay, Chair Roblin, members of the committee, thank you. I'm Kathleen Taylor, House District 41, representing Southeast Portland, Milwaukee, and Oak Grove. Thank you. I'm here today to talk to you about dyslexia, so one of the aspects we've been working on, a group of us. So thank you for the opportunity to speak about House Bill 2412A, the Teacher Standards and Practices Omnibus Bill. And I want to thank Vicki Chamberlain, who I'm not sure if she's here today. There she is. For supporting the provisions we added in the House concerning education preparation for identifying and teaching to students with dyslexia. Several of my constituents are members of Decoding Dyslexia, a national organization focused on improving the educational experience of students with dyslexia. They are here today, over here. On their behalf, I, along with several House members and Senate members, introduced Senate Bill 612, a comprehensive bill dealing with dyslexia. In addition to assessment, continuing education, and additional resources in the Department of Education focused on dyslexia, Decoding Dyslexia identified increasing teacher preparation as a top priority. The current guidelines regarding dyslexia are not enough, and Senate Bill 612 has passed this committee and gone on to Ways and Means, but it was decided that the teacher training piece would be better placed in House Bill 2412, which is why I'm here today. And the TSPC has been agreeable to that. This bill comes to you from the House with a unanimous aye vote, and I urge you to support it with a do pass recommendation. And have any questions if anybody has
any questions? Senator Cruz.
Just want to thank you for this. There are several things we need to do: early assessments and get there with the right training. Kids never fall behind and are successful. If we drop the ball, we've created problems, and this is going to help us solve those problems. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Cruz.
Any other questions for Senator Taylor? Representative Taylor, did you want to speak on any of the other bills, or are you just happy with your one that you testified on?
I am going to stop there because I'm very late for my committee.
Okay, yeah, sorry about that.
So I'm going to excuse
any
myself.
Questions for her before she runs off to her committee? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
The floor is yours, Representative
Johnson.
Thank
you, Mr. Chair, committee members. Great to be here. For the record, I'm Mark Johnson, state representative from Hood River, and I'm pleased to represent House District 52. Just to piggyback a bit, I hadn't intended on making any comments on House Bill 2655, but since you're talking about that today, I thought I'd take the opportunity to do that, so thank you. First of all, we heard this bill on, I heard it in House Ed, I'm not on House Ed, but we had a chance to address it on the floor of the House. It's important to point out there's two different content areas in 2655, and I really wish it were two separate bills, because the one part I totally endorse, which is the Student Bill of Rights, if you will, which just says basically that an institution, if we're going to be testing students, we should be able to explain to them why and what the results will be used for and what's the purpose and intent behind that. I think that has broad support, and I would wholeheartedly support that. Where I have issues with the bill is on the opt-out provision regarding the standardized assessment, which, as we know, is all referring to the Smarter Balanced Assessment, because that is the only standardized assessment we're using right now in Oregon, or we'll be replacing what we've been doing with OAKS. So having said that, I mean, I'm wearing two hats here, I guess, as a legislator and as a school board member, where we are in the process of implementing and carrying out our Smarter Balanced Assessments right now. And it's been interesting to me to see how the discussion has evolved. And I've explained to some people that it reminds me a little bit of the scenario where the parents go to the Little League game to to watch their little tykes play, and they end up breaking up out into a fight in the stands while the kids are just trying to have fun. Because a lot of the pushback that I see coming locally in my district, and I think as you'll see probably in this room after I get done here, is from parents who are anxious about the assessment. And I believe a lot of that anxiousness gets transferred to kids, and they necessarily then feel that as well. Just a case in point, you know, the assessment's going on right now. It is. It's going on. But, you know, the sky's not falling, and districts are kids are showing up at their school every day. Teachers are teaching. It's happening. In our home, in my district in Hood River, I've been staying in close contact with our curriculum director, and she has said that, you know, this is really an informative time because we're getting to see how things work. We're learning as we go through the process this year so that in the next go-round, a year from now, we'll be better prepared and we'll be able to offer a better assessment that meets the needs of kids. You know, she says there's a few questions that are really problematic. Kids are just being stumped by. We'll work on that in the interim. We'll have a chance to modify that. But I think the other thing to point out, and hopefully you're aware of this, is that at the same point in time where we have in this angst or the test or the assessment within the K-12 world, on the other flip side of this public education world in Oregon, on the higher ed side, both the HEC is working along with our community colleges and our universities in determining how we can use that 11th grade assessment as a college entrance exam, meaning if you get a certain cut score on this test, you automatically would be deemed ready for college. Or it also would be tell us which students in their senior year really need some heavy remedial so that when they graduate, they don't have to pay for that remedial before they can go on to college coursework. So in other words, how can we give the assessment value? Because there are those who would say, well, there's no reason here, there's no value. Why should we subject our kids to this turmoil, if you will? So there is a disconnect, I guess I would say, within public education in Oregon. In fact, just a week ago or the same day that the bill was up on the House floor, Ben Cannon was quoted in Education Weekly talking about how the HEC is looking at this as an assessment tool, as I just described. So my biggest, issue is with the length of the opt-out. I think 6 years is just a long time to continue to put that out there as something that's promoting it, because again, it's a mandate that it puts upon school districts. The bill, I think, calls for two separate notifications that school districts are going to have to give out, one at the beginning of the year and another one, I think, 30 days prior to the assessment. That has to be communicated, it has to be done, it has to be carried out. It will be a drag on the system and staff time. But I guess my other question is, and I think Senator Hass was alluding to this earlier, is what would we replace it with? Other states have had this same conversation. I don't know if you've tracked any of that, but as you go to national conferences, you get to hear from other legislators. And some states have just said, you know, who were in initially have said, well, legislators have gotten involved. I think Oklahoma is one of those states. And they said, no way, we're not going to have any smarter balance assessment here. And then the day after the governor signs the bill in the law, they go, oops, what do we do now? Because our remedial rates are like 78% for kids who are graduating from high school. And they said, well, what do we do? So they go back to the drawing board, come up with their own assessment, which coincidentally looks a heck of a lot like Smarter Balanced. So all that to say, other states are in this same situation. From my perspective as a school board member, as a legislator, I would say let's just keep on course here. It will get better with time. One other point I would say, if you looked at some of the news coverage, I think the Oregonian had a week ago, maybe it was a week prior, is those schools that have the highest opt-out rates happen to be the schools that I think come from the highest socioeconomic areas of our cities and of our state, meaning the kids who are left are the kids who might have more difficulty with the exam. So it seems to me, again, evidence that I think where we have parents that are a little bit exercised about that, it leads to getting involved in a process that's not good for kids. So with that, I'll close my comments on 2655. And love to turn the page to House Bill 3069, which passed out of House Education unanimously, also passed off the floor of the House in good shape. But this is about third grade reading. Third grade reading is a topic that I've been passionate about over the interim. I've had a chance to work with both Rob Saxon, Nancy Golden, and Governor Kitzhaber's office on what we could do to, again, focus on improving our outcomes in third grade reading. It should be no news to this committee, but I think one of the easiest evidences of that is that students who are reading at benchmark when they leave third grade are four times more likely to graduate in high school. The bang for the buck is certainly there. There's almost a direct correlation between third grade reading benchmark scores and high school graduation. Statewide, we're at 68, I think, percent on students who actually read well at the benchmark level at third grade. We've got about a 69% high school graduation rate. So it seems to be real direct correlations there. And again, this is not a topic that's happening in a vacuum here in Oregon. Other states are doing some dramatic efforts here to raise the standards for how we're teaching, how we're training our teachers. That's what this bill is really about. How can we raise the standards so that the folks that are going into elementary ed to be teaching our first through or K through fifth or sixth grade really have the tools necessary to work with kids? The goal of House Bill 3069 is to ensure that all teacher candidates have demonstrated knowledge in the science of reading instruction. Oregon does not currently require a rigorous reading assessment tool to ensure that elementary teacher candidates are prepared in the science of reading instruction prior to entering the classroom. With the instruction of the Reading Initiative from ODE and the OEIB, Oregon teacher candidates must be prepared to support students as we raise reading standards, and ultimately all teachers in Oregon would be trained at a level of a reading specialist. So other states are doing some remarkable work. Massachusetts has what they call their Massachusetts Test for Educator Licensure. It's a test that now is also being modeled in three other states. They also have what they call the Reading First Plan. It's administered by the Office of Literacy in Massachusetts, and one component of this plan is to focus on significant professional development for teachers in the science of reading instruction. Ohio has what they call a third grade reading guarantee, which ensures that every struggling reader gets the support that they need and an IEP then is created for each one of these students to move them up so that they're not struggling readers anymore. All pre-K through ninth grade teachers are required to pass an assessment of reading instruction beginning in 2014. So I included some of that in the material that I submitted to you. So in that light, this is an attempt to try to do that as well. And basically what it would call for is basically the bill says that the Teachers and Standards and Practices Commission will adopt rules that require teacher education programs to demonstrate that students enrolled in the programs receive training to provide instruction that enables pupils to meet or exceed third grade reading standards and become proficient readers by the end of third grade, as designated by the State Board of Education. And that reference to the State Board was verbiage that Rob Saxon suggested we get in there, because as you well know, ODE and the State Board collaborate on that. So a teacher education program may make a demonstration through course curriculum, approved textbooks, or other program requirements. What we heard from those who are engaged in this these teacher training programs, specifically at George Fox, is that what they don't need is another bubble test. They don't just need another objective assessment. What really we're talking about here is having teachers have the ability to demonstrate, i.e. with kids, that they know how to assess student needs, know how to work with assignments to give them course levels, reading instruction that's appropriate, and then help these kids to truly reach their potential. I would just close with the National Center for Teacher Quality made some recommendations regarding Oregon, and it said that Oregon should strengthen its teacher prep requirements to ensure all elementary and early childhood candidates have the ability to adequately incorporate complex informational text into classroom instruction. They also said incorporate literacy skills as an integral part of every subject. Oregon should, either through testing frameworks or teacher standards, which is what we're talking about here, include literacy skills and using text to build content knowledge in history, social studies, science, and technical subjects. And finally, Oregon should articulate specific requirements ensuring that elementary teachers are prepared to intervene and support students who are struggling. So again, this bill only focuses on those teachers who are going to be going into elementary education. It's not across the board. Obviously, the most important development is there at that point in time. We've got the support of the director of teacher preparation programs at George Fox. I think there's a letter in OLIS from Chalkboard. Stanford Children has also supported what we're trying to do here. So again, this aligns us with what's happening across the country as we all focus on what are those key benchmarks that are most relevant, most important in the lives of students, and third grade reading, I think, is it. So with that, I'll be quiet and entertain any questions.
Any questions for Representative Johnson? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So we have three bills open, and we're going to kind of do it so that we can. There's a couple people who have to leave. So we're going to go back to House Bill 2412A, and we're going to ask Vicki Chamberlain and Diana to come on up. And whoever wants to go first.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin and members of the committee. My name is Diana Sticker, and I'm a founding member of Decoding Dyslexia Community. I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 2412 and the provision directly relating to dyslexia. At Decoding Dyslexia, we receive emails or give advice to families from Bend to Burns, Talent to Tillamook, and from Portland to Pendleton. Many emails and correspondence we receive are from teachers asking for more information about dyslexia and teacher training. Many teachers are telling us that they don't have the tools and training needed to help their students in their classrooms from their university programs. And as a result, we decided to put together a short video of their voices and of some of the quotes that we hear from teachers. And so I just wanted to take just a moment just to read a couple to you. I have been a teacher for 15 years, seven of which as a first grade teacher, yet I could not identify my own son. That's something that we hear often, not even being able to help their own child. I'm a trained special ed teacher. I was never trained in how to teach children with dyslexia to read and write. On a personal note, I have a sister who's a teacher. And when she was little, she was sort of the child that everyone gravitated to, all children gravitated to. And as she grew, she said to me, I want to be a teacher. And I was like, of course you do, because you're just perfect for that. So she, fast forward a few years, she had twins. And so she has two girls. They're fraternal twins. And one can read, learn to read in first grade and kindergarten quite normally, and the other, surprisingly to her, had quite a lot of difficulty. And we didn't realize that this ran in our family so deeply, but and she didn't know the warning signs and didn't really understand probably why Rosie would throw the book across the room or get really frustrated. So now my sister, Liz, is spending time becoming a reading specialist in her school. So she's going back to getting a reading endorsement, but she said to me the other day, you know, they don't really have anything on dyslexia, even in my reading endorsement at the master's level. And so she decided to take it upon herself to do some online training from California. So her reading endorsement could actually be used to help some of the most struggling readers in her school. And I share that story because it's just a personal story, and I know what it's like to have to see someone care so much to try to help their kids. They happen to be my own sister, so I just wanted to share that. And so, Decoding, just to wrap up, we support the part of this bill and the provision that requires education preparation programs for teachers to provide instruction on dyslexia, and that this instruction be consistent with the best practices and knowledge standards necessary for kids with dyslexia. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, Vicki Chamberlain, the Director of Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, and to testify both on 3069 and 2412 as it relates to reading. I think it would be helpful for you to know that the commission adopted the EdTPA as a performance assessment, and the elementary teachers portion has only reading and math in it, which will require a demonstration of proficiency in reading in addition to the content knowledge, which right now 40% of half of their test is reading proficiency. But it'll allow us to really embed the strength of those reading programs, 3069 will, and the commission has been working on that for a while. And as far as the dyslexia goes, I think we've learned if things aren't called out and pointed out, they often don't get addressed. And what we've learned in looking at this is that it has, when we Ask Teacher Prep programs, it was falling between special education and general education. And now, to cover that, we specifically noted that elementary education, special education, early childhood education, and reading intervention all will include these new dyslexia standards. So, and we invited the, we actually put the language in there to report back to you how it's going after we were here at the hearing, and it is an important issue on that piece. So that's it for dyslexia. Any questions about that?
Any questions for these people? I don't see any.
Okay, so very quickly on the rest of our bill, this is one of two agency bills. It does clean up in our statutes, which are over 35 years old, and in particular, we went to eliminate some inconsistencies. So we've updated outdated terms. We've changed teacher prep to educator preparation. We've separated the definitions of teacher and administrator, which were blended because our statutes were written prior to the collective bargaining law. And it updates our statutes related to educator preparation and the standards that we set there. Looking forward to Title II in the Federal Higher Ed Act, which is going to have some new accountability provisions. And the one of the major things it does is the commissions have the authority to fine school districts for failure to have their teachers properly licensed, but the last time the commission did this was 1989. So we've asked to eliminate that provision in the statutes, and how it's been handled for the last two decades is through sanction, if that's appropriate. So, and finally, all of the investigative casework by statute is required to cross my desk before it goes to the commission, and we've fixed that so that can be delegated.
Any questions for either of our witnesses? Thank you both.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to speak to Senate House Bill 2412A? Seeing no one, we're going to close the public hearing on 2412A. And we already have Senate Bill, House Bill 3069A open. So we're going to call up, I think, Joel Fisher and Iris. Come on up. Is there anyone else that wants to speak to 3069A? Don't see anyone else, so this is the... Yes, either one first.
Good afternoon, Senator Roblin, members of the Education Committee. My name is Iris Maria Chavez, Government Affairs Director with Stand for Children, Oregon. Just wanted to come up and get on the record in support of House Bill 3069. As Representative Johnson said, there has been quite a lot of work done over the last couple of years, and in particular this legislative session, to really address how best to support both students and educators in early literacy and preparing students for success in the later grades through literacy efforts. So we really see this as a way to hone that up on the teacher prep end, and look forward to working with Representative Johnson and others in moving this forward this legislative session.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joel Fisher on behalf of Oregon Business Association. I would just agree with everything Iris said. Good bill should pass.
Very good. Is there any other discussion? Don't see any. You're also on to speak on the other bill. Do you want to do that now, or do you want me to call you back?
I need to get my notes.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll
us back.
We'll just close our hearing on House Bill 3069A. And we have the public hearing is open on House Bill 2655, and we have a list, so we'll go down the list. So, let's have Hannah come on up and Imelda come on up and Ben.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Hannah Vandering. I'm an elementary physical education teacher and president of the Oregon Education Association. OEA and our 42,000 members are dedicated to helping to create a quality assessment system for the students in Oregon. And we're here today to testify on behalf of House Bill 2655 because we believe it's a step in the right direction to help us get to the point that we need to go for our students. There are two key main components that you've heard today. The first is the Student Assessment Bill of Rights. Our students need to own their learning. They need to understand that this is about them. The work that we do as educators is to help prepare them for a successful future. This Student Bill of Assessments helps them understand why they're being assessed, how that assessment will be used, and what they need to do in their learning to get to the next point so they can be successful. The second component is the ability for parents to make the right decision for their own child. Currently, you know, we have two reasons that a parent can opt their child out of the standardized tests. This allows parents to opt their children out if they don't believe that it's the correct choice for them. We don't believe that opt-out is the answer to the assessment problems that we have in Oregon. We believe it's a way to help us get to where we need to go in Oregon to actually use assessments correctly with our students. There's a six-year sunset, as you've heard, and this is something that we don't believe is necessary, but we're supporting. We believe it gives the time to make sure that the assessment system that we build can be implemented appropriately. There's also the reauthorization of ESEA, which will impact assessments across the nation. And we want to make sure that as we do our work, that parents are not having to make a decision based on just two components, which we have right now in Oregon, which is for religious or disability reasons. I think you've had a great conversation about assessments here, and you've asked several questions about what we're doing currently in Oregon and why we need to see change. For the last year, as we've worked with Dr. Golden, with the Department of Education, with Dr. Rick Stiggins, to create the system of assessment, our dedication has been to make sure that when we are concluded implementing our system, that our students have something that we're all proud of as Oregonians, that we know that the assessments that we're using are truly being used to inform learning and help our educators and our students and parents understand what we need to do in the classroom and in our schools to help students be successful. No Child Left Behind started us on a spiral of testing for accountability purposes. It's not what assessments were created by educators for. It wasn't about accountability. It was to measure learning. And that's where educators in this state believe we should go. We should be using assessments in an ongoing fashion. Our assessment system, the proposal that we have out right now, has standardized assessments. So to the question of do we believe that there should be standardized, yes, there's an appropriate use for them, but not what we're doing right now. The time, the focus, and the money that we're spending on high-stakes standardized assessments is really taking away from student learning and taking the love of learning out of our schools. The work that we've done, again, I want to emphasize how important it has been to work as a team with the Department of Education, with Chief Education Officer Nancy Golden, having 16 educators from across the state who have dedicated their time and energy to getting this right. We come to you with this recommendation for House Bill 2655 together because we believe it's right for students, we believe that it will make a difference in education in Oregon, and we want to lead the way in the nation. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions that you have, but I hope that you will support House Bill 2655.
Thank you. We'll go to the rest of the panel, then we'll have questions.
Buenas tardes, Chair Roblin and members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me to speak with you today. For the record, my name is Imelda Cortez. I'm a fifth grade teacher at Adams Elementary in Eugene, Oregon, and I'm a parent of two sons in second and fifth grade. I am here today to support House Bill 2655 as a parent and as a teacher of 11 years. As a parent, I am confident that there will never be a standardized test in existence that will indicate to me how successful my sons will be in life. As a Latina who went through the Oregon education system, I know just how harmful the effects of these assessments can be. I remember as a high school student being told that I would live up to the statistics for Latino student success, which meant that I would likely not perform well on standardized tests, which would in turn affect my success in college and in life. Not once did my high school counselors or teachers mention to me the prospect of attending college. I remember an adult telling me that I would be lucky if I scored more than a 600 on the SAT, as this was the expected level of achievement for minority students. This was heartbreaking to me as a student on many levels. Being the first in my family to attend college and receive a degree was a huge dream that not only I had for myself, but so did my parents, who are Mexican immigrants and unfortunately only had the opportunity to receive an elementary education due to the hardships that come with being raised in a small Mexican town, as well as being the oldest child in the family. They left school before third grade to help provide and care for their younger siblings through hard work in the fields before deciding to embark on a difficult personal journey that included risking their lives to cross the Mexican border in order to provide a better life for their own children that would be filled with opportunities and successes. This journey was the first of many innumerable sacrifices they made so that their children would not have to work as hard as they did to make a living. The last thing that I want for my own children is for them to be told by an inequitable assessment that they are failures. I know that education is a ticket to a better life, and I want nothing less for my kids and the students I teach. This is why, as a parent, I made the tough decision after several weeks of consideration to opt my fifth grade son, Marcos, out of the standardized assessments. This was not an easy decision for me, nor did my school district make it any easier on me. I had to read through the 6 pages of verbiage on opting out in my school district's form, which was not very easily accessible through their website. If I, as a teacher in my school district, struggled to find the form, think about how difficult it was for families without internet access or the means to navigate our system successfully. As a Catholic, I battled with the idea of having to claim a religious exemption, but in the end, I decided that my moral beliefs that subjecting students to a test that can ultimately kill their self-esteem and their potential for success were strong enough to opt my child out. I am one of the few lucky Latina parents out there who is educated enough about what these assessments mean, as well as their potential negative impact on students, that I was not only able to make an informed decision, but also had the tools to access an opt-out. On the other hand, while making this decision, I also struggled with the fact that many of my family members and close friends would not be able to make the same decision because their trust in our education system is so strong that they will not question anything that we say. In the Latino culture, educators are highly respected and revered. We do not tend to question decisions made by our children's teachers because we believe that they have their best interest in mind. As I have been administering these assessments, which have taken countless hours away from authentic learning and authentic assessment, I cannot help but think about not only the second language learners that I have in my classroom currently, but also those that I have worked with over past years. As a teacher, I strongly believe the negative effects of these assessments far outweigh the benefits. The test is confusing and long. It takes far too many hours away from instruction. I've spent at least 15 hours on these assessments and have only completed 2 of the 5 tests I must administer. This assessment widens the achievement gap. It sends a message to many students, especially the minorities, that they lack what it takes to be successful in life. As an educator, I cannot morally support an assessment that promotes a culture of fear that demoralizes students and educators, and I hope that you will take a stand with me as well by supporting HB 2655. Let's work together to put the emphasis back on classroom teaching and learning. Let's give every student a fair shot at being successful by having authentic teacher-created assessments drive instruction and by giving everyone equal access to opting out of standardized assessments.
You get to have 12.
I get to have 2. I know.
Yeah, you're twice.
I don't know if that's good or bad. Good afternoon, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Benjamin Gorman. I live in Independence, Oregon. I'm an English teacher at Central High School. Thank you for allowing me to speak with you today. As a teacher, a lot of my job revolves around asking questions, and the best questions I can ask don't have simple answers. I invite you all to come visit my classroom and meet some wonderful young Oregonians who are learning to critically examine every side of the most difficult questions I can think of. I think you, Senator Roblin, would particularly like the Yoda collection in my classroom. You'll have to come by and check that out. Today I'm here to ask a question that's not just difficult, it's impossible. Our school districts have been told that they must encourage at least 95% of all students to take tests we know won't help in the education of those kids. If there's any doubt about that, let's put that to rest. The tests are not designed to provide diagnostic information. That's not their purpose. The companies that make them and sell them admit that. Furthermore, we don't get the results until after those students are through with the school year. The tests don't even help students indirectly by improving the system. We've been living in the shadow of No Child Left Behind for more than a decade, and the most important thing we've learned is that directing resources away from instruction doesn't improve instruction. Testing students more doesn't mean teaching them better. Many districts freely admit they would rather not give the tests. While giving these tests under duress, the districts also have to deal with the fact that parents have the right to opt their children out of the tests, but only if those students have a disability or a religious objection. Caught in this bind, the districts try to limit which of those opt-outs they will honor. Some districts say certain conditions, like anxiety, don't qualify unless they rise to the level of an IEP. Others say that moral objections don't qualify as religious. A different district superintendent told me he wouldn't accept a religious objection which hadn't been presented to him before the new SBAC test because he didn't believe a person suddenly converted. Both these kinds of denials create dangerous legal liabilities for the districts. If a parent challenged a denial stating that their child's condition didn't constitute a disability, the district could find itself in an expert-filled courtroom. If the parent challenged the denial of a religious objection or even a moral objection, the district would almost certainly lose a legal fight because the district personnel or the elected school board members would be acting as government representatives establishing which religions or lack of religions gave parents certain rights, a clear violation of the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. But because parents don't know about these rights, and because many parents wouldn't consider suing, the opt-out provision as it currently stands creates an equity issue. Students with parents who have more education and means get one set of rights, and parents who don't get denials. But then, when a district is faced with dual mandates to test every student while allowing some students to opt out, how is a district supposed to behave? Like I said, the question is impossible. As a parent and a teacher, I found myself in a nearly impossible situation, too. I knew I had the right to opt my son out of the testing, and, as a teacher, I knew the testing would do him no good. But I also knew that a battle with my son's school district was a battle with my bosses. Ultimately, I chose to opt him out, despite the fact that it put me and my employers in a tight spot. It came down to my moral beliefs, and I ask you to consider if they rise to the level of a religious objection. Here's what I believe and what I don't believe. I do not believe the people who run my school district want to make third graders cry for no reason. The district's leaders are scared that they will be punished by the state or the feds, that they will lose funding or be sanctioned in some way, and so they hurt those children because they have made the calculation that those children's unnecessary but temporary pain is offset by the pain the state could inflict on all the children year-round. Here's what I do believe. I believe it's wrong for adults to needlessly hurt children out of cowardice. I believe every religion agrees on that point. Passing a universal opt-out takes the decision out of the hands of frightened adults and puts it in the hands of brave parents. I'm asking you to give parents the power to decide what is best for their children. Maybe those parents' courage will flow up the chain of command and be felt in Washington, D.C. Please be brave for Oregon's parents and Oregon's kids. Support a universal opt-out. Thank you.
Any questions for this panel? See none. Thank you very much. So next we'll have Bill Porter, Iris Marie Chavez, and Joel Fisher.
You want us to go in that order?
Either way.
Right. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Bill Porter. I'm a parent of two public school students in Portland. I've also coincidentally worked in education policy for 25 years, and that's given me a chance to really work with people around the country, educators and policymakers, to see how different policies play out and to get some ideas for what Oregon could be doing better. Maybe most important to the debate today, I'm also the parent of a seventh grader who's taking Smarter Balanced. I've submitted some testimony, which I hope you'll have a chance to look over. I'm not going to read it. I just wanted to briefly review some high points in the interest of time. I'm not one of the lonely voices today who are asking you to vote for this bill. And in fact, I think my point of view actually represents the perspective of most parents who are not in favor of this bill, who actually do think that tests are important. They're not the only thing that matters in schools, but tests do matter. And it's important for us to know how our kids are doing. And even in Portland, which has a couple of percentage points of kids that are opting out, it's still a small minority of parents. So I don't know what problem this bill solves. Let me say I'm a supporter of smarter balance. That's my perspective as a parent who has studied the test and spent a lot of time looking at the sample test questions, who has spent a lot of time talking to my son's teachers, and who has talked to my son about his experience. Many of the complaints we hear today and that you're going to hear are really about testing in general, about standardized testing, about how we use tests, about the accountability system, about the federal government. Or there are complaints about OAKS, which is the test we used to use. We hear a lot of talk about how we didn't like OAKS because it was multiple choice. It wasn't very valuable. It focused on memorization. It didn't measure problem solving. Teachers focused on test prep and how to choose the right answer. Well, it seems to me, in Smarter Balanced, as I look at the questions, it's a test that's finally worth teaching to. It responds to those concerns. It requires a lot more writing. There's open-ended questions where kids can't just choose an answer. They actually have to think about what the answer is and explain it. There are complicated questions. When Representative Gorsuch says it took a teacher 18 hours to prepare their kids for the test, I have no idea what that sort of what sort of test prep that looks like. As I look at the questions and what I know my kid did on the test and what he tells me about the test, he's writing answers to questions. He's arguing with evidence. He's filling in math questions where he has to not just choose the correct answer but actually construct the equation and then solve the equation. It seems to me teaching to do well on the test is really good teaching, and that's what we're after here. Or as another teacher who said at a PTA forum in Portland that I went to, who's looked very carefully at the OAKS test and the Smarter Balanced test. Smarter Balanced is a better test. So let me be clear, having said all this, I don't think Smarter Balanced is perfect, but I think its imperfections can be addressed, and I think there are some real questions that you and ODE ought to be looking at. I don't think the performance on the test is the only thing that matters. I look at other things to gauge how my son and my daughter are doing at school. This is also the first year of the test, and there are inevitable bumps, which we're hearing about. Different school districts are implementing the test in different ways. Some school districts have been really aggressive and proactive in communicating with parents. Others have been less so. Let me also be clear, I'm not against parents making a well-reasoned choice to opt out of the test, but I don't think that's what this bill does. Unlike other states like Illinois and Kentucky, Oregon actually already allows opting out. We've heard that. We've heard from people who have opted their kids out of the test. So this bill doesn't simply clarify and create uniformity. It actually makes it a whole lot easier for parents to opt out. It sends the opt-out form, as I read the bill, home twice a year. And just like signing the permission slip for a field trip, you sign the form, you send it back, you're out. So if it's really about just adding another checkbox so people don't feel like they don't have to check religious interests, let's just amend the bill and add a checkbox. Where are the parents who are saying that they tried to opt out and were rejected by their school district? I think what we're hearing from is parents who have already opted out, who are able to navigate the system. So one of my objections to this bill is that it makes it easier for anyone to opt out. You know, we learned last week in news reports that school immunizations, another great issue I know you all are struggling with here in Salem, have increased. And we hear that's because parents now have to meet with a doctor or watch a video to learn more. In other words, we ask them to be informed, to actually study the facts and have an informed decision before they sign and make a decision about what to do. This bill doesn't have any sort of information. Another objection I have is that I don't see how policymakers can have it both ways. You know, next year there are no consequences with Smarter Balanced. The Department of Education has requested a waiver from the U.S. Department of Education. A bill is moving through the legislature that essentially says there are no consequences. We won't use the ratings and report cards. We won't use it in teacher evaluations. So I don't know how we can say that we need more time and it's not a valid test and then say, but we are actually taking some time to figure it out. We can't say we need a year to pilot and get it right and it doesn't count, and then also say people shouldn't participate in it while we try to figure it out. We need everybody to participate while we try to figure it out. And finally, when parents opt out their students, that robs me as a parent and you as policymakers of information about how students, how our schools are doing. When not very many students participate, the data we get about how kids are doing isn't accurate data. You as policymakers don't know what to make of the data. What does it say about where teachers need more support? What does it mean about the quality of our schools? And I as a parent don't know what I can do to help my student or where he or she might need more support. So in conclusion, taking tests and showing what you can do should and always will have a role in education, just as they do throughout life. Instead of fighting over Smarter Balance, it would be great to focus the conversation on getting the resources and supports so more schools can feel confident they are preparing our students for success, not just on the test, but success after high school. For this parent, at least, House Bill 2655 doesn't solve any problems. I think it actually makes them worse. And as I was preparing for my testimony today, I saw the great quote on Senator Knopf's website from Abraham Lincoln, who says, "You cannot escape the responsibility of tomorrow by evading it today." I think this bill dodges the question about whether our students are learning what they need for success in Oregon schools, and how will we know about school performance. I encourage you to oppose the legislation. Thank you for your time.
Chair
Chair Roblin, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joel Fisher on behalf of Oregon Business Association. We're a statewide membership-based association with members across Oregon, big and small, numbering over 275. We're here to testify in opposition to this bill. We've heard lots of arguments about this bill, this Smarter Balance Test making students feel like failures. And if we tell students they are failures, they will definitely feel like they are failures. We can teach our students that the test is not a measure of their worth, but rather a tool to figure out where they can improve their skills. We can create the culture that we want around these tests. I myself taught for a couple of years, and in my classes, I created the culture that I wanted. I had inherited a class that was pretty far behind. Their test scores were low, and one day after getting their test scores back and not a single student had gotten a passing grade and seeing the look of, you know, the look of failure on these students' faces, I devoted the entire class to talking to these students about, you know, they have to want to learn and that they're not failures and that together, if they actually are motivated, they can improve and they can learn. And we made that something that was a part of our class every single day. I would walk into the class and ask them, you know, are you here to learn and do you want to learn? And we would go over kind of sort of, you know, that perseverance lesson, if you will. These tests serve a greater purpose. They gauge the health of Oregon's educational system. When parents opt students out of the test, educational leaders and policymakers have less reliable information to improve services and target resources to support kids. We live in a globally competitive world, and already Oregon companies rely on recruiting top talent from out of state. This bill does not address some of the concerns that have been raised about this test. Maybe this test is terrible, but we won't even have the data to know that if so many students are opting out. We shouldn't be telling students that they can't do well. We have already heard from somebody who testified about a teacher telling them that they wouldn't do well on test scores. I don't know why we would turn around and continue to do that same thing. We're devoting a lot of energy to saying that students are gonna fail when we could be devoting that same amount of energy to encouraging our students and teaching them that that they can succeed. I've got an article that I will hand out that you can read later about schools in Clackamas County that are doing just that, teaching their students that, you know, failure is a lot part of the learning process, and it doesn't mean that they are a failure, but it can gauge, you know, really where they need to learn. With that, I would urge your opposition to this bill. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone. Again, Senator Roblin, members of the committee. My name is Iris Maria Chavez. I'm the Government Affairs Director with Stand for Children, Oregon. At Stand for Children, we believe that an annual check-in in our students' academic progress to assess the quality of their education is important. We in Oregon, several years ago, moved to higher academic standards for our kids. And with those high standards came new assessments that measure critical thinking and problem solving, replacing some of the less helpful tests under OAKS. We feel strongly that House Bill 2655 throws out that important work, the work of 4,700 teachers across the nation, which actually includes 500 within the state of Oregon who worked on both the Common Core standards and the assessments that go along with them. We wouldn't know if schools are putting students on the path to being college and career ready without this information. If used extensively, opting out of these assessments will make our achievement gaps and our ability to close them invisible. The Oregon testing window for this school year is not yet over, but we do have preliminary information to show us who is and isn't opting out of statewide assessments. The Oregonian has reported, according to Portland Public Schools data released in early April, that schools where the majority of students are higher income and have higher academic achievement are those opting out at the highest rates. The data also showed that upper income kids at high poverty schools are opting out at higher rates than the low income kids of color in those same schools. Just this morning, 12 national civil rights organizations, which include the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights, the League of United Latin American Citizens, my former employer, the National Council of La Raza, National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, and the Southeast Asia Resource Action Center put out a statement voicing their opposition to anti-testing and opt-out efforts across the country. They stated that these data provide the power to advocate for greater equality under the law. As I read that this morning, I was reminded of my third grade experience. Growing up in a low-income Hispanic community, I was in a daycare center with third graders from the three different classes in my elementary school. And one day, a few parents noticed that some of the students had brought home homework for the multiplication tables and others hadn't. led to some conversation amongst the parents and then a conversation with the teacher in the school who's not providing multiplication table homework. And it turns out that she said, well, they'll get to it eventually, I think maybe in fourth or fifth grade, which led to a conversation with the principal about why are some kids in the third grade getting education around multiplication tables and others are not. And nothing was ever solved in that situation. Our parents banded together and got us some outside assistance from a community-based organization to get that education in the math skills that we needed. But as I was reflecting on that statement from the civil rights organizations, I thought, is that really where we want to go back, where kids with even in one school building have different experiences? The opt-out bill not only increases inequities for the students within schools, within districts, and within states, but it's also a significant, it could have a significant financial impact on our schools in Oregon. The U.S. Department of Education in the last couple of months has stated multiple times to states including Alaska, Colorado, Delaware, and Illinois in public letters that a participation rate lower than 95% puts at risk their Title I funds. These communications clarify that a state education agency and the local education agencies have to provide for the participation of all students on the state assessments. This requirement does not permit certain students or a specific percentage of students to be excluded from the state assessments, nor does it permit a state education agency to exclude from its accountability system students who decline to participate in these statewide assessments. In my written testimony in OLIS, you'll see a link to a letter from the U.S. Department of Education to the Colorado Department of Education. The Colorado Department of Education requested and was denied a waiver from that requirement. The U.S. Department of Education is very clear that a failure to properly assess all students on a uniform statewide summative assessments in grades 3 through 11 and 11, 3 through 8 and 11 will not be accepted. I'd also like to point out that earlier this legislative year, the Oregon Department of Education provided testimony in relation to House Bill 2714, which was also an opt-out bill, and in that testimony they stated the following. Their concern with 2714, while Oregon has a waiver from the federal No Child Left Behind Act, that waiver is dependent on a 95% participation rate for its statewide summative assessments. The passage of House Bill 2714 puts federal dollars at risk. We've heard from the U.S. Department, the Oregon Department, that this could put at least $325 million in federal funding for our schools in jeopardy. At a time when Oregon is struggling to find enough money to support our students and educators, we can't afford to lose this federal funding. We can't afford to lose track of our students yet again and mask both the progress being made and the challenges still being faced by Oregon schools. It's simply irresponsible to create a process that encourages families to refuse smarter balanced and puts $325 million in school funding at risk, the funding that follows our neediest students. We respectfully request that you do not move this bill forward.
Any questions for this group?
Well,
Senator Hess.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I guess I would ask Iris about those. This came up earlier about the education money, and if indeed yep. this is where do we find this? And it's your opinion, I guess, your organization, that should we move down this road, that we will be getting similar letters like Colorado or?
I would have to say that I am probably not the best person to answer that question. I do understand that the letters received by the state departments of education in the states I listed came in part from questions asked by the state agencies and legislators in those respective states. And I think that it's possible that the Oregon Department has more information on that. But
we will ask them later today. So they're ready this time. Any other questions? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Joel, I've known you for a long time. I forgot, where did you teach at?
I taught in Taipei, Taiwan. That was what I was doing in between.
That's probably when you were visiting.
The 2011 and the 2013 legislative session.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair.
Yes.
I just think it's highly unlikely that that the federal government is going to withdraw education funding. I think in the Supreme Court said in the Obamacare decision that it can't affect or can't compel a state and threaten funds for something that's a state issue. So I think Louisiana is suing the Department of Education on that very issue. And so I think it's unlikely that that would be the case.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments from this group? Thank you for being here. So I have one more panel, and then I'll invite the Department of Education up. So that would be Celeste, Tad, and Mindy. Ah, thank you. It's almost exactly like it's spelled. That's pretty nice.
Good afternoon, Chairperson Roblin and members of the committee. My name is Celeste Pellicci. I am an eighth grade science and health teacher in Gladstone School District. I've been there for 10 years. I'm also a parent of a seventh grader who attends Hosford Middle School in Portland Public. This will only be the second time I've testified in front of a committee. And although I've been involved in education politics for many years now, this is the first issue that I feel strongly enough about to leave my students in the middle of the day and come down and talk to all of you about. So I'm here today to support House Bill 2655. As a parent, I know that no standardized test results could ever indicate my son's true college and career readiness. High-stakes tests do not measure the critical components of future achievement. Research indicates that Tucker's mindset, perseverance, that's my son, Tucker, ability to work collaboratively, and creative thinking are the most reliable indicators of his success. Time wasted for standardized testing is valuable time away from authentic learning and authentic assessment from his classroom teachers. Every parent deserves to know how much testing their student will be subjected to, what the tests supposedly measure, and what the test results will be used for. Parents have the right to opt their children out of any class, any lesson, or unit based on their personal opposition. Why would the Smarter Balanced be the exception to these standard practices? By establishing a statewide opt-out form, the bill provides all parents with the same opportunity to choose the best path for their children. The Oregon law is not being equally implemented at this time. House Bill 2655 is an important part of a much larger protest happening across the country. Parents are revolting against the overtesting of kids by exercising their right to opt out. As a teacher, I feel somewhat powerless to change the federal mandates that take time away from instruction and punish kids with hours and hours of testing. As a parent, I can exercise my right for Tucker to learn the valuable skill of computer programming while his peers take meaningless tests. From my perspective as a teacher, the benefits of these tests outweigh their drawbacks. The test is too long. It takes many hours away from instruction. Oregon already has one of the shortest school years in the country. A one-size-fits-all approach is never the best practice for a teacher. Students can demonstrate proficiency in many different ways in my classroom. This test limits them to show proficiency in one single way on one day. Once they've answered a question on that one day, they cannot return to it. The teachers at the elementary school in my district report that their third graders are taking about 15 hours, 15 class periods, to finish the language arts portion of the test. It will take them an additional 15 hours to complete the math portion of the test. These are eight-year-olds sitting for 15 hours in front of a computer, 30 hours in front of a computer taking a test. It's far too much time for one test for an eight-year-old, and far more time that is needed to assess the learning of the students. There must be a shorter test that can help us assess where our students are. In fact, there is, because we do it every single day as teachers. At the middle school, the students are spending about 10 hours to take the language arts test and about 10 hours for the math test also. We've seen a huge rise in behavior problems as students are trying so hard to focus on these tests that then afterwards they just can't keep it together. Our school's been a very difficult place to be the last few weeks, and testing has been a big piece of that. There are students that feel very, very stressed about the test themselves, and they try very, very hard. I teach eighth graders. I teach 13 and 14-year-olds, and they do what middle schoolers do. They either really, really care and really try and try really hard and get really stressed out, or they look at it and say, this doesn't really matter, so I'm not going to do it. We have one student who started the math portion of the test yesterday, and after 20 minutes, he said, I'm done now. It's high stakes for schools, and it's high stakes for the state, and it's high stakes for teachers, but it's not high stakes for the students.
my students are accountable in my classroom because they care about me and they know that I care about them. That's what holds them accountable, not a state test, not a standardized test. I have seen these tests punish our most vulnerable students. I'd like to tell you a story of one of the students that I have. He has a pretty severe visual impairment, and I've had this student for 2 years. And I called his mom one night, and I said, I think that your son would probably benefit from not taking this test. And she said, what, is this test any different than it used to be? Are they taking the OAKS? I said, no, this test that they're taking is very different. It will take about 4 times as long as the test that he took before. And the things that it requires visually are very, very complex. And she asked me for more information, and she submitted opt-out to our district and was granted the opt-out. And because of this, this student, it will be one less thing that this student has to worry about as he struggles every single day just to make it through the day with his visual impairment. I have another student who we struggle to get to do anything. He says, I don't want to write. I don't want to read. It's too hard for me. It's not too hard for him. He's just shut down. He's shut down because of all the struggles he's had throughout the years. I called his mom and said, we're really trying to get this student working again. We're doing everything that we can, the people that he cares about, the people that he connects with, to try to get him going again. And we're having some success with it. The minute that we put him in front of this test, that's going to end. She opted him out. We had another parent whose son suffers from a lot of anxiety, and she submitted the opt-out form, but she didn't want to put anxiety on the form because she didn't want to, disclose. Yeah, she didn't want to label her child as having anxiety and being anxious, and that's not a reason that you're able to opt your student out. So at first, her opt-out was rejected by our district because it didn't qualify for one of the reasons, even though really it was in the best interest of her student not to take the test. There are lots of these stories all over the state. At this current time, 8% of parents have opted their kids out of state testing in Portland Public Schools. 8%. That's almost 2,000 kids who are not taking the test. If you ask me, that already invalidates the data of the test. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time and your attention, and I hope that you all will support House Bill 2655. Thank you.
And you don't have to be very close to it.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chairman Roblin and members of the Senate Education Committee. For the record, my name is Tad Shannon. I'm a social studies and language arts teacher at Churchill High School in Eugene. I'm on leave to serve as president of the Eugene Education Association, which represents roughly 1,600 teachers and substitutes in Eugene districts 4J and Bethel. I'm also the parent of two students who both graduated from Eugene schools recently. I'm here today to speak in strong support of HB 2655, which would greatly expand parents' and student rights as they relate to state testing. As president of EEA, I hear from teachers in both school districts who are increasingly concerned about the impact of high-stakes testing, including Smarter Balanced, on their teaching time as well as on their students. At a meeting of my executive board last night, both elementary and secondary teachers who serve on that board were complaining about the fact that the last month of this school year will pretty much be totally consumed by taking tests because some students finish earlier than others. They have to figure out ways to accommodate kids. They have up to 70 kids. One of the teachers was saying they have 70 kids sitting in the library waiting for other kids to finish the test, and they don't have adequate supervision. And you can imagine what 80 eighth graders sitting in the library is like in a warm May afternoon. This is also, but I think to address some of the comments made earlier about why the fuss about this test, I think part of the fuss is that this is also coming at a time when we are struggling to capture every single minute we can to teach kids. Our district last year had 9 furlough days. That was 9 days the kids weren't in school. And now we are spending virtually the entire month of May testing kids. Is that what we won back our furlough days for, is to spend the time testing our kids? It doesn't seem to make sense. As the new Smarter Balance tests are rolling out this month across the state, districts like ours are grappling with what is turning into a logistical nightmare of trying to manage a barrage of tests in the final few weeks of the school year. One of the biggest challenges in recent weeks has been the complicated and convoluted process that parents who choose to opt their students out of these tests must endure. In District 4J, for example, a parent must wade through 6 pages of verbiage, followed by a blank page, a mysteriously blank page, before actually scrolling to the opt-out form itself. After more than a month of advocating on behalf of our Spanish-speaking families, the district finally put up a Spanish version of the opt-out on the website. As you know, current law permits parents to opt their children out of these tests based on either religious beliefs or disability. Many districts, including 4J, have made the process particularly difficult. Let me cite one specific example that one of our teachers recently went through. My example is an elementary teacher who attempted to opt out her third grade daughter, opt her out of the Smarter Balanced exam. Her daughter is on the autism spectrum. I was contacted by the teacher after she was denied her right to opt her daughter out of the test for disability reasons. Here's a brief excerpt of the appeal letter that she was forced to write to plead with the superintendent to let her daughter opt out of the exam. This is a quote from her letter. As you are well aware, many children have ASD, that's autism spectrum disorder, don't outwardly express much stress at school, but instead bottle their feelings up at school and are able to maintain through the school day, but when they get home, they let out all of their sadness, frustration, anger, and multitude of feelings out at home. Well, with testing, this just escalates to a detrimental level for many children, including my daughter. My daughter has ASD, and she does have evaluation accommodations in her IEP, but they would actually cause her more problems in this case. She has very high anxiety, stress problems, perfectionist issues, self-esteem problems, repetitive tendencies of self-doubt and negative thinking about herself, and taking tests is one of the triggers that bring these on. She will pinch her face, break down and sob, stop working and functioning on whatever task she is doing. The letter goes on at quite length, and it concludes this way. Please consider this appeal for my daughter. You can save her from further damage on feelings of being inadequate, different, feeling isolated, and the stressful sobbing, flapping, face-pinching, shutdown mess she will be if she is required to take the Smarter Balanced assessment that she will not pass, even though it is adaptive with her IEP accommodations. I'm happy to say that the superintendent ultimately granted this teacher's appeal. I guess my point today, this afternoon, is to speak out in the hope that other parents don't have to go through the same hoops to do what they believe is right for their own kids. Thank you, and I hope you support HB 2655.
Chair Roblin and members of the Senate committee, my name is Mindy Larson, and I'm from McMinnville, Oregon. I spent the last 20 years as an educator. I've taught in public schools in Oregon. I've been a teacher educator at 2 universities, and I'm currently an associate professor of education at Linfield and the elementary ed coordinator. But most importantly today, I speak on behalf of my children who attend Oregon public schools, one at the elementary level and one at the middle level. So I'm here today to testify in support of House Bill 2655, the Student Assessment Bill of Rights, provides parents important information regarding their children's education. As a teacher educator and a concerned citizen and parent, I've had access to and the ability to do the research on the Smarter Balanced assessment, as well as the testing vendors that have been contracted and subcontracted by the Oregon Department of Education. In my written testimony, you'll see a more lengthy description of the concerns I have specifically with the Smarter Balanced assessment, and to highlight a few which reiterate what other people have said today. The loss of instructional time is my first. My son, in his middle school, they have devoted 3 weeks this month for the English Language Arts exam, and 2 weeks for the math exam. This doesn't count the Oak Science Test he spent a week working on in April. And for his peers that did not pass that Oak Science Test, will be taking it again for an additional week once the Smarter Balance Assessment is done in the month of June. My daughter at the elementary level has also, because she's in fifth grade, taken the science assessment. Same thing for her peers who haven't passed it, will spend another week. And they have also blocked out significant instructional time from the English language arts and math portions of her day. One of my big concerns with Smarter Balance is that it's the written portions are not scored by teachers, and perhaps you're aware of that. It's been subcontracted out to barely above minimum wage with the requirement of a college degree, but reading the accounts of people who've worked in that industry are very eye-opening, and I've given you a couple of sources to investigate. Of course, there's increased costs and our limited tax as a taxpayer and the funds where we'd like to see head straight to instruction and books and great instruction is getting siphoned to this test. And of course, there's issues with validity and reliability. I think about these eight-year-olds that are typing in their responses and what that means for the kinds of results we get. I don't think we're going to get results that will give us a sense. If they're scored by temporary workers and on the assumption that eight-year-olds have that keyboarding skill. So I guess I want to come back to this piece. I've done research. I've shared that with my peers, my colleagues, and try to make it accessible to the people that I know, but it's not widely distributed to all families. In McMinnville, to opt out, the only way you can opt out is to meet with the principal face-to-face, and that is where you get the form. They have not posted any of the opt-out forms on any website, so you have to have the time to come into a school between 8 and 2:30 or 3:45, or to make an appointment, and then you have to have both the skill set and the moxie, the gumption, to talk with the principal, someone that's in charge of the school, and to explain why you want that form that is there. I had positive experiences speaking with both principals, but of course I interact with them in lots of ways through my career and my involvement in schools. But as you might imagine, that's experience would be harder for families that work two and three jobs, whom English is not their first language, and other barriers that sometimes can create a difficulty for families to get the information they need. So I'm in support of this bill because it gives all parents the information to know about the summative assessments their children will take, the dates the children will be taking them, how much class time will be required, and what will happen to their test results. And I do believe that all parents deserve that right to the information so they can make an informed choice on behalf of their children. So I urge you to support House Bill 2655 and move it to the Senate floor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions for this group? Thank you. So Cindy, whoever you want to come on up, thanks. And there is a rules committee after this one, so we're either going to have to put off the other two or go through them very quickly. So, yes.
Hi. Cindy. Chair Roblin, members of the committee, my name is Cindy Hunt, the Government and Legal Affairs Manager for the Department of Education. My intent is to keep it really short and only address the federal withholding of dollars question relating to House Bill 2655. So I'd like to be able to give you bright answers, but we also have a goal at the department to be really transparent with you all. And so IRIS is totally correct that some states, when they asked the U.S. Department of Education around opt-out bills, you know, did that put federal funds in jeopardy? And the U.S. Department of Ed kind of said, well, yeah, but they focused on participation rates. And what I mean by that is Colorado was one of those states, and I believe she has provided that to you in her testimony. Delaware is another state. And so what they said to Delaware specifically, and the reason I'm citing to them, that was the one that was received about 2 weeks ago, so it's the most recent, is they said, you know, under the ESCA, states are required to assess all students. But then they said, but there's an exception that you can have a 95% participation rate. And they went on to say that if an LEA, so something like a district or a school, dipped below 95%, they would expect us, the Department of Education, to seek a range of enforcement activities against the school or the district. We are also being held to a similar standard of 95%. The other thing, though, that I can tell you is that other states have opt-out provisions. Some are more restrictive than Oregon's. Some are less restrictive. We could not find a state where money was withheld, although we, like I said, found multiple states where the threat of dollars was definitely expressed to them. So that's what I mean by being transparent. I can also tell you that Oregon has had opt-out provisions, as you've heard from many testifiers today, for years around religious exemption and disability. Oregon has not, however, to my knowledge, received a similar letter to Delaware or Colorado telling us that, you know, they would withhold dollars based on our current system or based on the one proposed in this bill. So while I would love to be able to sit here and tell you one way or the other that either there will not ever be federal funds withheld because of opt-out or that there will be, I cannot do that today based on what the feds and how they've said it to other states. Clear as mud.
Senator Haas.
Thank you. Cindy, on the rate, is it 95% statewide or does this go to districts who are above 90 but not districts who are below?
Chair Roblin, Senator Haas, it's both. It's both at the district level, the school level, and the state level. And that's under the current federal law that exists today prior to this bill, and it'll be, you know, under the current federal law that it exists after the passage of the bill. So the concern that's been raised with this bill is that we'll encourage additional opt-outs, and so the percentages will dip below 95%. At the department, we do not know what our state percentage is right now as we're in the middle of administering the test. We do know, you know, we're very well aware that in some districts, such as Portland, there's been some articles that would indicate that they may be dipping below, you know, the 95% rate. But we don't know that as a state yet. Also, the federal requirement, you know, we're talking a lot about opt-out. Actually, the federal requirement is 95% of all kids available have taken the test. So the opt-out is opt-out, or if you just don't show up, too, it counts against you. So that's also important to understand around the federal requirements.
We had testimony earlier today, I think you were here, that the Department of Education said that the federal funding is not in jeopardy. So can you verify that claim?
Yeah. Chair Roblin, Senator Haas, I believe the reason statements like that are made is because it's true that the Department of Education has not received communication to date from the feds that says that federal funds are at risk for 2655, right? So that's a true statement. But I would also be remiss if I didn't say, you know, other statements that were made today that, you know, other states have received some of these communications that are concerning. Around this 95% participation rate, you know, that those are not, you know, concerning to us. And so I think that it's a little more complicated of an answer besides just federal funds are at risk or they're not at risk. What I can tell you is that Oregon is in a similar situation to other states.
Okay. Thank you. We're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill. We're going to do one vote, by the way, before we go, if you can stay down for one vote. We're going to close the public hearing on 2655. We're going to open a work session on 2680. Senator Cano.
Chair Oblin, I move House Bill 2680A to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Senator Knope moves House Bill 2680A to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? The bill is passed and we don't have to assign a person. We might as well do the other. We got 10 seconds. Mm-hmm. We'll see how this goes. We're going to close the work session on 2680A. We're going to open a work session on 2715A.
Chair Oblin, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments as presented.
Senator Canope moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments as presented. Is there any discussion on the Dash 2 amendments? Is there any opposition to the motion? Seeing none, adopted the amendments. Senator Canope.
Chair Oblin, I move House Bill 2715A as amended to the floor with due pass recommendation.
Senator Canope moves House Bill 2715A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? It is passed. Is there a person who would like to carry this bill? Is this a positive one that you were talking about? No, my senator at the end. Senator.
Sure.
Okay. We'll have Senator Yeltsin.
Yeah,
she is. Yeah, I was thinking of, right. I got that right. Yeah. So we're going to close our work session on Senate Bill 20, yes. House Bill 2715A. And I think that takes care of our business for the day, so we will adjourn. Thank you very much.